Amazon Summit. We're going to just have a general discussion here, and wonderfully facilitated by Don Ball, Steve Borsch, and Med Canada, about the theme of the Unsummit and getting creative in tough economic times. So I'm going to turn this over to you guys, and we'll go from there. I have a wireless mic that I'll be running around with for questions.
Well, let's kick this off with me. Just to warn you, there's really no huge preconceived structure to this talk, and I speak for myself, but I have no right to be here because I think many of you have just as many good ideas about what we can be doing to stave off the impending doom and gloom. All I know is, and I think this is my personal motivation in being part of Unsummit, has been that there are just tons of really good ideas out here. And people working on stuff, and maybe if there's one thing that our fair towns have lacked is a real culture of collaboration. Those of you who come from marketing and advertising will recognize this, that if I ask you how business is, you'll be like, great, you know, and even if it's going terribly. And you won't tell me anything about the clients you're working with because you don't want me to go chase after them. And I think that comes from kind of a perspective or a view that this is a zero-sum game, that there's only so many clients to go around, and so if you got one, I can't have it, and vice versa. And I personally, you know, just philosophically, I would much rather work from a position of, no, this is a pie that we get to grow and expand. And I think even in trying times like this, you still need to go in with a positive attitude to say this isn't a race to see who can get Target and Best Buy and, you know, United Healthcare and all these big brands. If anything, I think what maybe has kind of crippled our thinking is that we all chase after these big brands, and there's a lot of other activity going on in this town. There's small businesses, there's startups, there's mid-sized businesses that you've never heard of.
Nonprofits, government organizations, universities.
Yes. See, I just committed the sin. So anyway, so that's my own motivation in wanting to get groups of people like this together who don't seem to, you know, if I think about the kinds of people I meet here, we seem to do a good job of connecting and kind of taking unlike, you know, jobs and industries and different things like that, and actually finding a way to, you know, to find common ground. So when you extrapolate that now and you look at the whole this whole market, I'd like to see how we can actually do more community-focused things to help ourselves through these times. And one of the things, and now I'll be done. One of the ideas that I had proposed for a session, but it didn't quite stick, but I'd still like to throw it out there, is there some kind of community socially based job board that we could develop for this area that brings together employers and other people with open jobs and gigs, who maybe aren't very good at marketing that stuff in the traditional ways you market openings, that they can get those out there, that you know, the people who are seeking can find those jobs, and that we can actually, you know, almost like LinkedIn, I guess. I'm not saying we should reproduce that, but something that's really locally based, and it gives us a chance to actually be more efficient in how we connect to you know, our skills to openings that are out there. So that's something I'd like to see developed, and that would be an example of the kind of community, like almost sharing and spreading the wealth, that I'd like to see.
I think the reason that I'm at the table is because, like many organizations in our community, I'm looking for ways to help folks during this downturn, but also looking at this positive angle on things. The library certainly can be a new kind of gathering place and have a new role in this discussion, and so that's why I'm trying to stay at the table. Certainly, in times of difficulty economically, we end up steering away from the more creative options and trying to stay the course with our traditional services and whatnot. So this is a challenge to stretch ourselves. And as the library, we feel that, and I know as professionals, you all feel that as well. So it seems like this is a good time for us to stop and say, wait a minute, how can we make this really a positive measure? And if there were something like a job site or that kind of thing that we could contribute to as organizations, then that would be lovely.
I'm kind of sad, and
sorry,
had to start that way. I've always been accused of being a happy-ass optimist and been told you need to be a little more pragmatic, Steve, instead of being so excited about certain things, new technologies and so forth. But I brought this up in a session earlier today, and it's what I'm experiencing. It's what I'm seeing others that I know, colleagues and peers and former coworkers, that organizations, every organization I talk to, every leadership person that I talk to within my client organizations, are open to possibilities more so than I've ever seen in my entire life. And I've spent a great deal of my career selling, doing business development, market development. I was the VP of alliances at Lawson Software, so I've touched people at a lot of different levels and been involved in a lot of different aspects of organizations. And when I left Lawson, I've been doing my management consulting now for 3 years in the internet as a platform, formerly Web 2.0 space. No one's using that anymore. A little bit of social media thrown in there, but it's about the shift that's occurring. And it's as though you've heard this before, but you don't need a meteorologist to tell you that the sun's not shining right now, or it's not, it's a cloudy day, and you can look out the window and see that. But you need somebody who has a satellite to look at the fronts coming in, to see what's coming in. And we all are experiencing so many different things with social media intuitively, and with widgets, and using video, and blogging, and connecting with one another, that other people aren't seeing, especially in leadership positions. And not only are people not wired, usually in leadership positions, to be connectors and to be people with high needs for affiliation, they want to see the ROI. So in the old days, you could buy time on TV or in radio and newspapers, magazines, all of that. None of us, I would bet, for the most part, are paying attention to any of those traditional channels of message distribution or ways of connecting with people. And because there's so much flux and shifts that are going on relative to where we're all paying our attention and how we're connecting with one another, everyone is befuddled. Everyone is uncertain. Everyone doesn't really know which direction to go in. And then you add to that, the tsunami of negativity around the worldwide economic meltdown and so on. And everyone focuses on the 8.1% unemployment rate. And somebody that I'm connected to, and probably in here, tweeted just the other day, hey, what about the 92% of people that have jobs? We're not focusing on anything that's positive in the news and a lot of discussions. And so I know I've taken steps to not hang out with people that are really negative. And I turn things off. I'm turning off news. I'm shutting things off. Because instead, I'm trying to get out of myself and attune myself more to the needs of companies who are experiencing exactly the same things that we are, which is, what do we do? Where do we go? How do we try? Where should we take risks? What should we get into? And the kicker, again, as I'll come back full circle, is that I always used to use the metaphor that the doors open a crack, and my job as a sales guy or as a business development person or with alliances is to try to push that door open a little bit so there can be some light in there so you can have a conversation, and then hopefully they'll fling the door open and you've got a full-fledged partnership or a customer. And I submit that little sliver of light, meaning the door was almost slammed shut, is open about this far right now. And people are open for you to show them another way and at least talk to them about the possibilities of moving in that direction.
And I know Don mentioned a job board or some kind of collaborative tool. Certainly we all bring our own expertises to the table, and that's one of the beauties about the diversity of this group. I think that we all bring different expertises, different fields, with the common thread of technology and social media. And one of the things in the last session I was in, which was about sabbaticals and breaking away and work-life balance, was talking about books that I thought might be helpful for others or that I read and enjoyed. And even just sitting here, I'm already making mental notes. Certainly, I'd love to compile book lists and do reviews for something like what Don was talking about, because that's my brand, books. So that's the kind of collaborative stuff that we can really come together as this group and produce.
So I have a question, maybe a show of hands. Who is being paid to do work right now that 6 months or a year ago you wouldn't be doing? How many people? Okay, maybe, 40% of the audience, maybe?
Can you explain that a little more?
Sure.
Well, couldn't have done?
Well, not I couldn't have done, but wouldn't have done. So I'll give you a personal example for me. So a client that I have now has been a friend of mine for 18 years, a serial entrepreneur, did internet broadcasting and Share Senior Care and a bunch of other techies.com. And he has a new adventure that he's on. And he had a bunch of needs and didn't have money at the time really to devote to things. So I said, well, you know, I've got all the audio equipment and I can do video editing stuff and all that. You know, he needs some screencasts. His daughter's an actress in LA and she flew her in to do the voiceovers. And I brought all my stuff out and re-recorded this stuff. That has backed me into screencasting. And it's going to sound funny because I never in a million years would have envisioned myself doing this, but now a company out in the Bay Area, I've done 10 screencasts for, which sounds like it's just a goofy, stupid piece of business, but it's like it's just brain dead simple for me to do, and it's pretty lucrative, and I just backed into it. And I've got two other pretty good examples like that. So that's just a for instance that, you know, it's not strategic and it's not fitting into where I'm headed, where my vision is, where I'm headed, but you know, at this point, you got to take what you can get too. So, does that kind of answer it?
Yeah, I mean, when I heard you ask that, I was going to say yes. But what I was thinking to myself was, there's work we do that 10 years ago we couldn't have done simply because of power structures that don't and can't exist anymore. So there's a lot of people who would have slammed the door in our face, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago. That now, not only did they let us in, but they need us so that we can both survive. You know? And I think that's the beauty of the sort of, you know, I don't want to say to anyone who's lost their job that's
a good thing.
Hey, there you go.
I don't want to say that the shrinking of any industry is a good thing, but I think what's happening with a lot of this is a distillation of, okay, well, if we're dealing with less, both resources and people, how do we continue to do work on the same level or you know, God forbid, an even higher level? So if that means parsing out an ability to add to your sort of arsenal, for lack of a better term, that you didn't have before, I think that's key. You know, that's how you survive. I mean, Don called us and said, well, I'm going to do some video at a conference in Florida. Well, I could have said, well, we don't really do conference video. I mean, we're more ad guys. But I went and you know, I had to put up a dumb ball for 4 days, granted, but the reality is we had the best horse shoes ever, and the video turned out really well. That's just from my corner of the world. But I think everybody's got something that someone has asked them, do you do this? Where, as you said, 5, 6 years ago, they would have said, no, not really, that's not quite what I do. And I'm not saying everyone should claim to be an expert on things they're not, but the ability to learn and say, you know, I've never done that yet, but I'd like to learn. That's to me, that's ambition.
Yeah.
So then somebody playing a role they shouldn't.
Do you think it sacrifices quality? You know, if suddenly everyone and their brother is, yeah, I can do that. Sure.
It's funny, actually. We were talking about screencasting before this session, and the question came up, are you doing any screencasting at the library for training and that kind of thing? And I said, no, we're not. And the reason is that we haven't been able to attain a level of quality that my superiors feel comfortable with in terms of us releasing content. We just don't have the money for the equipment for that level of quality. And more folks have the tools to produce this kind of content. But I think there is a decision to be made there.
Yeah, I think that the quality measurement that gets almost put aside in times like these where everybody has capability in so many different areas because the tools are so readily available and getting easier and easier, yet the companies are saying, I really don't want to pay for the expert to do it because we just don't have the budget right now. And so the person who doesn't have the skills but has the tools is doing the work. It puts the people who are experts in the top place.
Well, so can I tell you a quick story that has nothing to do with social media and internet as a platform, but goes back to the 80s when the economy was also in the doldrums. And I had just gone to work for a manufacturer's rep firm. And one of the guys that was a buddy of the owner, you know, this plaid sport coat, cigar chomping, golf playing guy, and he had bought a tool and die company. And I asked him, because it was totally out of character with all the other real estate and all the stuff he owned, I asked him, I said, why'd you buy a tool and die company? He goes, well, Borsch, it's all about selling. And they weren't selling. I said, well, okay, so what does that mean? He goes, well, I came in and within a month, we had five new contracts. I hired two new guys. We got, you know, bought new equipment and, you know, yada, yada, yada. And it was all about selling. And he says, sales fixes everything. And that's all I ever heard from the guy was sales fixes everything. You know, to the point where you just, like, don't want to be around him anymore. But his point was right on, is that no matter what, go sell. You know, just go knock on the doors. And so, you know, ultimately it's up to the buyer to make that qualitative decision. Is this person, does this person have the skills? Have they done it before? You know, you do, you know, a level of due diligence to figure it out. But it's the person that shows up and knocks on the door. It's the one that is willing to go after it and say, I'm willing to put my energy and effort into this. And yeah, I can do it. And yeah, I've got this expertise and I've done these other things before. And it's hard. I mean, you know, I've spent a good probably 30 to 40% of my career actively selling, and it's not easy. Boy, I talk about, you know, rejection and sales cycles and lengths and all of that, but it's a matter of saying, this is my value proposition, this is what I want to do, this is what I am doing, and would you like to buy it? You know, to go out and do that over and over and over and over and over again is it just has to happen.
It may be also what we're seeing is a trade-off between, you know, whereas when times are good, and also I think in, you know, kind of the older creative economy, you know, that people would pay for the expense of ad agencies, and it was worth the investment. You know, maybe there's businesses that are starting to question that, and good enough is good enough, providing, and especially if somebody comes to you with a formed idea and says, look, here's what I'd like to do, and I'm not the best at video, I'm not the best at whatever, but, you know, I've formed this idea and you can just take it, you know. So I think we're seeing trade-offs in terms, you know, yeah, there's beautiful, beautiful work being shot by people like Fallon, but can everybody afford it? Can everybody, you know, are people investing a little bit differently now? There was a question over here, I think.
Yeah, a comment, first of all. I saw on the website, I don't know if it's true or not, but there was a study where they went and they tracked the amount of time people spent on the same video on YouTube with high production and editing versus low production and editing, and the low production and editing won. People spent more time on the videos with low production values and low editing. So one of the things I wonder about that is quality a conceit of creative people to some extent, and where is the line between that? And maybe there's authenticity in rough things. You know, maybe it's more human. But it's an interesting topic.
Well, you know, the best example, I think, is when you look at CD sales, you know, just basically bottoming out while MP3s go crazy. Any audiophile will tell you that, you know, I mean, you know that a CD sounds way better. But yet there's something about, the trading value is that, you know, an MP3 file obviously you can take it anywhere. It can just go anywhere. And so ubiquity, or having your music anywhere at any time, trumps quality. And so I just think that that's the same trade-off we're seeing, that maybe just getting online quickly with something that speaks to people is better than having, you know, going through all the machinations to perfect something and then finally release it. Because what if you find, you know, that's riskier, because what if you find out that thing that you crafted so lovingly doesn't quite take off?
But if I could give you a really pertinent example, because it just happened about 3 weeks ago. The client, so this shop out in the Bay Area, the client looked at three different groups. I'm not a group, but looked at three different groups to do these screencasts. We each had to submit a piece of work, a promo. And so the guy that owns the firm, the HR development firm, said that he looked at all three of them. And he said, I can't give you the URL because you got to log in. But he goes, just listen to these. Just listen to them, the other two. and tell me if you hear anything. So he starts playing the first one. This is over Skype, so the quality's fairly decent. Then he plays the second one. He goes, so what'd you think? I said, well, you know, they both actually weren't too bad, but both of them had ground loop hum. And if you don't know what ground loop hum is, it's really evidenced by a lot of headsets that you plug in with the USB into your laptop, and it's a small hum that's in the background. And I've gone, and I did this like six quarters in a row, did a round robin looking at all of the Web 2.0 sites from go2web20.net and looking at all the ones in different categories. And I can't tell you how many times I go, and it would say take a tour, and you'd click take a tour, and you'd either pop up or you'd jump to another page, and there'd be a screencast of their value proposition, and you hear, you know, in the background, this ground loop bump. And the audio just wasn't good. And you could ask 10 people, so what'd you think was the problem there? And they would say, I don't know, but it just was kind of cheesy. They couldn't identify that it was because the audio just was bad. So I think that a lot of things that are more immediate, people will accept a lower trade-off in quality. Just like we do with cell phones, we accept lower quality telephony for the mobility. We'll do the same thing with immediacy. So if somebody puts up a video right now of the Unsummit, you know, okay, that's cool because I get to see it right now versus, you know, a company doing a promo. And that's where I think quality is. You know, maybe we'll all get to the point where we want better and better quality, but right now it's really too expensive to stream high def for most companies. So.
And there's a gentleman who asked for the microphone.
That happened with typography is going to happen with internet video. So
Tim said
the same thing that happened with typography about 20 years ago when I was selling prototyping machines, and I saw Macintosh Laser Printer and PageMaker and knew that I wasn't going to be selling those anymore. Typography did go away. There was a lot of really crap magazines, really crappy print stuff that was done because you could do it on a Macintosh Laser Printer and then it happened with Windows, etc. Today, the quality of printed material is not as bad as it was 20 years ago. It's the same or better, right? So the same thing is going to happen again, where this video that's very rough and tumble right now, the pros are going to pick it up and they're going to do it. It's already happened with podcasts and the audio side. It's going to happen on the video side as well. So you're going to see production level come up, but you're also going to see great opportunities for people to publish video, audio, whatever they want, just because of what's happened with blogging. So I think it's very similar to that.
I want to come back to the point that Steve was bringing up and looking at sort of social networking. I think a lot of people are very fearful of networking. And they come in with an identity. This is what I do. I don't think people will like me if I do something different. And getting back to your selling point, people have to see that they have to sell themselves and they have to adjust to what the demands are of the day. And there are tons of opportunities out there, but the question is, do you see yourself doing those things where the opportunities are, and are you flexible enough with approaching those opportunities and then getting in and then finding out how you fit in to those opportunities? No one in this room has only one skill, one ability, one identity. They have to be flexible and go in. And I agree with you, the jobs are out there. But you have to be able to understand what they need. In many cases, they don't know what they need. So it means you have to go in and do your homework, find out who they are, what they're after, what they're struggling with, and not impoverish yourself with lack of imagination. Mm.
A business identity is also now bigger, too, as we all become free agents within our organizations. As my colleague and I have been working on our social media strategy, looking at some of the employee groups that have formed on some of these social networking sites and trying to figure out, oh my goodness, these people represent us? How do we control this? Do we try to control this? Do we let go? You know, that identity piece and trying to control identity certainly changes dramatically in this new landscape.
One more time.
Oh,
well, I was just sort of back when we were talking about what's real. Authentic, and I was remembering that when the 9/11 towers, how the first day of that news reporting was live or real or citizen publishing basically, and then afterwards. it's all branded. And I just, you know, my feeling is that consumers, you know, people like us are becoming less and less trusting of all of the high quality. For me, I'm looking for authenticity. That's kind of what I'm looking for now.
I mean, rather than well-scrubbed PR messages written by a badge of 10 people.
Like Robert Redford with a few pockmarks, not airbrushed.
There you go.
I hope someone's catching.
Yeah, I want it on OH,
well,
please.
So I just to throw out one thing, and I, you know, speaking of authenticity, I've always talked about how there are no tricks, there are no shortcuts to getting to your vision or the essence of who you are and what you want to do and all of that, especially when things are in such a state of flux. But there's one thing that I find that I even am reluctant to do sometimes, but I have to force myself to do it because it's one of those blocking and tackling 101 sorts of things, is ask for referrals. So the first 2.5 years that I was doing this management consulting, I would ask my executive sponsor, who else do you know of in the Twin Cities that would be able to, or elsewhere, but Twin Cities mainly, that could take advantage of what we did. Well, you know, Joe Schmidlap over here, I think he could have been, well, great, would you mind making an introduction? Sure, you know, I'll do that. Well, 9 times out of 10, they wouldn't, and I'd have to shoot them an email and remind them, and then they'd almost immediately jump on it, and the door would be open again this far. I'd knock on it, step through, and, you know, 4 to 5 times, I'd end up with a new client. And that worked again and again and again. And now, in fact, some of us were just talking about this earlier, that there are needs that are out there that are shifting, and we're all kind of shifting some of our offerings and value propositions for our consulting. And so does that mean we need to ask other types of people for those referrals? Is there anyone that you know that would need what we do? And it's amazing that if you ask, what comes back. Or at least you're planting a seed, and then that person is then, you know, talking to, you know, Susie Jones, and Susie says, hey, you know, do you know anybody that does fill in the blank? Well, yeah, you know, as a matter of fact, so-and-so just asked me if I knew of anyone, and you put the two of them together, boom. And we have an unprecedented opportunity with social networking to ask.
Can I jump back to the quality just for a second? Because I think there's some good points being made, but I'd love to sort of gasp if I can to the thought that I don't think anyone should be embracing garbage, right? I mean, the point about barrier to entry being low, whether it's video or web or whatever, I grew up with a father who's a graphic designer. He used to own an Artograph. I don't know where his Artograph is these days, but I know he's not, you know, hanging on to it and saying, well, the hell with them. He bought an Apple Lisa, and he went on from there. And I think at first he might have some frustrations about, well, now everybody thinks they're design. Fill in the blank, pick the industry. I mean, Bill and I have worked by and large because there's a lot of edit houses in town with tons of overhead of outdated equipment that they're still paying off, so they can't lower their rates. But that doesn't mean we're going to embrace shoddy work. I think a good example, maybe, if you look at the film world is, yes, you know, really, really low quality can tell a good story, some of the real independent films, but that's not what you're seeing anymore. You can shoot a beautiful film for $1 million. It doesn't mean if you spend $100 to make XXX that it's great and Vin Diesel should get an Oscar just because you spent money. But the same thing, you know, if you're a good web writer, why would you put your stuff into a GeoCities website just to say, well, you know. So the YouTube question, I think, was a little bit, and someone tweeted here, maybe somebody should read some live tweets because they're pretty good at hearing them, but someone said that it's a little bit flawed because people still particularly think of YouTube as a place to go see homemade, low-quality, voyeuristic type videos. So a preference of that kind of video on YouTube perhaps isn't surprising. So, all right, now we're off that topic.
Phil Wilson has
some. Actually, we got two more. We probably have time for two more.
But I think what's great about this is, you mentioned the barriers are going down, but when those barriers are going down, people are loosening it up a little bit, you're seeing personality brought into the mix. And then, you know, I can look at a personality of a so-called brand and how well-manicured that is, but if I can see the people behind it, I can see the people who play behind it, and understanding and get direct connections without having to go through 16 different forms. It's like 2 weeks ago or maybe a month ago, we had a social media breakfast here, and it makes it, you know, you can get some of these rooms for free. I'm like, no shit. So I sent you an email, and I got it. And it's, how does that ever appear anywhere on the Minneapolis website?
You know, and on the Hennepin County Library website, you mean.
excuse me.
And that URL is?
www.hclib.org. The thing is that since I've been doing this, I am not the spokesperson for Hennepin County Library. My director is. But because I am willing to say where I work and I am talking about my workplace, I do a lot of reference via Twitter and via Gmail, GTalk, or other places that traditionally we're not doing those kinds of services. Is it fully part of my job? No. But I'm lucky that I have a manager who's willing to let me play, at least for right now. And that is a blessing. The personality piece is huge. You're dead on. And it's having the right personality to set loose with that kind of thing. Somebody who's going to stay on message and still be willing to do that.
To be honest with you, I don't know who your supervisor is, and I think I'd have to dig through a media guidebook to Hennepin County to see who the... Screw it, I don't have time for that stuff. I mean, it's like, it's, when I have a specific question or when I want to point to a resource, don't put all those traditional barriers around.
Exactly.
And once an organization kind of loosens up a bit...
Transparency, right?
Exactly. They move a lot faster.
Well, DM me anytime and I'll tell you who my manager is and anything else you want to know about the library.
Why bother? I have a relationship already.
There you go. Aww.
I'm going to jump back to quality for a second from the concept of there are a lot of people here that are producing content in this room, and I've often talked about for years in radio and now in new media is that sometimes we use this excuse of, well, quality's poor because, well, you know, it's a grassroots thing, or we don't want great quality because, well, we've already had great quality in mainstream media or something like that. And to some extent that can be true, but I also always challenge people not to use the fact that we're just too damn lazy to increase the quality to avoid good quality. You referenced MP3s, and MP3s, yes, are very terrible sounding compared to just vinyl records. Okay, they don't have the cracks and the pops, but the sound of an MP3 clearly isn't as good as a vinyl record. Now, the reason the MP3 was developed was because of the bandwidth that was available at the time. Now, we've moved past being able to receive, you know, better quality audio and better quality video because of broadband. So I would challenge everybody, yes, you want to make it simple for everybody, and quality shouldn't necessarily be the deciding factor as opposed to the content, but I would also encourage everybody to try to increase quality whenever you can. Just because it's the norm doesn't mean it needs to stay the norm.
Thanks. We should really wrap this up.
Can I make one last plug that I do want to make a book list after today? And if you've read something really positive or good that you think has helped you stay creative using social media, whether it's business or another area, please put that on the Twitter feed with the hashtag UnsummitBook. And I will make a book list so that you can check it out from your Hennepin County Library.
And I think one thought I was going to say, that, you know, I kicked off, we went kind of into a quality discussion, but I want to just come back to the idea of us being, you know, kind of a bit more of a kind of a boosterish community, meaning that, you know, you'll hear me tweet occasionally about extender.com, you know, which is this really cool site for you to have your own, you know, where you can have your own, like, virtual business card. That's the reason I do is because I really think we should be boosting each other's efforts, you know, if it's a local startup or even somebody who's out looking for work, that we should be really looking to kind of, you know, plug each other so that we're all hearing about local successes and then we're supporting them. So, you know, I think, like, for instance, you know, Follow Friday, which, Michael, where are you? Michael's world famous for kind of helping kick off Follow Friday, right? And, but that's an idea of, like, let me tell you about someone who I will recommend, you know, someone who I think is really quality. So, you know, I'd like to see some, you know, maybe there's something to be done where we could be recommending people, you know. I'm just borrowing from LinkedIn, I guess. But yet, we don't all go there because it's kind of a boring place. So I'm looking for some more dynamic. Maybe there should be some other kind of recommendation thing on Thursdays or something, you know. I guess you'll hear that from me again and again. I'd like to see our culture shift towards being even more dynamic as far as helping each other out and kind of paying it forward. So, is that it?
Thanks, I did not start following my research.
You coined the hashtag.
Actually, he wasn't listening. So.
Michael Baldwin gets credit for that. Thank you all. We'll put some links to all of their.